Welcome to Ex Templo, a podcast devoted to the spirituality of humanity in all its varied forms. Hi, welcome to the Ex Templo podcast for the week of July 23rd, 2007. This week I will be broadcasting the second part of a three-part interview with T. Thorne Coyle, a Bay Area pagan teacher and activist. I hope you enjoyed the interview and tune in for the third part next week. So on a kind of a less abstract and more, you could say, practical, not that what you're talking about isn't practical, how does the tradition that as you received or as you teach it actually engage in this practice of soul alignment? What kind of practices or methods are involved?
I sit every day. I sit every day as a form of self-observation. I sit as a form of connection to deity. These days, I actually sit a little bit less than I used to because I enter into bliss states almost too quickly now, and they're not very interesting or helpful to me. It's like, oh, that's nice, but is this helping my spiritual practice? The other thing I do that fairy tradition teaches is we have breathing techniques to help energetically link up our soul bodies. We believe that each part of our soul has an energetic component. We have these energy bodies that we can bring into connection, and we do that through something that is a form of prayer that is breathing. It's storing up life force and energy and sending it to our divine nature, so our divine nature, our God soul, can bring our parts into harmony.
This is like a sitting breathing practice?
Mm-hmm. It is. It's a sitting breathing practice, and I teach it via the fourfold breath, the breathing in for four counts, holding, breathing out for four counts, holding, because that mimics the natural way our body functions when we are breathing. And it also is a good way just to store energy and to also let me, all my parts, know I'm doing something special now. So I do that every morning, but throughout the day, anytime we raise a lot of energy, whether we go out jogging or we've had sex or gone out dancing, or if we're really irritated, we often have a lot of anxious energy, mm-hmm. things like that. We can also use that energy in the form of breath and breathe that to our God soul as well and come into a state of greater harmony. So we can use whatever energy we have available. I practice doing a more formal thing to start my day, but then throughout the day I'll just use whatever energy is available.
Do these practices, the breathing specifically, concentrate on the somatic aspects of feeling the breath in the body, or is there like a visualization component or an intent component? Obviously there's some kind of intent component.
It's considered a prayer because of the intention. The intention is I want to bring all my parts into alignment within me. That's my prayer to my own divine nature. Yes, we concentrate on the physical somatic aspect of what's happening with our muscles, how much breath are we taking in, really being aware that we're taking in full breaths rather than shallow, constricted breaths. And also, there's a combination of somatic and visual experience in that I want to fill up not only my physical body with breath, but my etheric body, which is the little sheath that's just outside the physical form. It floats about an inch outside the physical body. It's the part of your body that the hairs on your arm might stand up on end when you get frightened or something. It's because something, we believe something has activated that. So you can actually imagine pushing the breath all the way out to that, to outside your skin. And then breathing it up, tilting your head back and breathing it up into that globe I was talking about that descends in the people that have more full alignment. It tends to rest just above your head. So we imagine that. We imagine that there's this other sphere above the head that we're breathing up to connect from down deep in the belly up to this place just above our head, and that brings us into a state of alignment. People feel different things when this happens. Some people feel a snap, like things locking into place. Other people might just feel a rush of energy. Other people might have a more sexual response. You know, they'll feel a state of arousal for an instant when the souls come into alignment.
So these breathing techniques are the primary mechanism for soul alignment that your tradition uses?
Yes, there's that. And then there are many different ways to attempt to get to know the different parts of the soul and what they want. Meditation techniques and more practical techniques as well. Another thing that we'll do is we'll work with a couple of pentacles that also came through Victor. The Iron Pentacle, which is a way to reclaim and recapture energies that the dominant culture tends to twist and pervert. And those are the energies of sex, pride, self, power, and passion. There are basic birthrights as humans, and we tend to build up a lot of complexes around them because of the way the culture treats them. And so we need to look at those and unpack those and try to call some of those energies back. And once we have those a little more fully in our lives, they open up into what's called the Pearl Pentacle, which is love, law, knowledge, liberty, and wisdom. So when iron is present, pearl appears. And we work with these both conceptually, practically, and energetically. So we'll also run those energies through our bodies. And I've developed moving techniques that I call devotional dance to help access those energies.
All right. Thank you. You know, right now you make your living as a professional teacher working with this material and other material. And you're teaching workshops all over the country, if not the world. I'm not sure of the exact scope of how...
I teach all over the world.
So is this the core of what you're actually teaching to people in your professional life, doing this? Or is the scope of that wider? What exactly do you do?
Sometimes I say that what I'm teaching is to help people become adults. The thrust of my work is to help people become integrated. That's my project. I want people to become fully integrated humans, fully integrated in their own lives, effective, strong, compassionate, and able to connect outside of themselves, able to be a full participant in the fabric of the limitless. So, yes, the core of what I teach are the various fairy practices that I receive through the tradition, coupled with what I bring to it, my movement practices, my studies with Gurdjieff and the Sufis, all the things that I have brought from my own work and practice, and from my own communion with deity and other beings. What else do I want to say about that? I firmly believe that if more people were working and living from a state of alignment and connection and relationship, the world would really be a better place. We're in a mess right now, environmentally, socially, you know, with poverty, violence, and all of these come from a state of disconnection. So I want to help people to reconnect. And part of that is through the basic thing that the Oracle of Delphi taught us all, which was know thyself, mm-hmm. right? We don't know ourselves. So that's step number one. I want to know myself so then I can know you. Then we can know community. You know, unless I'm in relationship internally, I can't have any satisfying, healthy relationship outside of myself. So that's the thrust of my work. And I really firmly believe that, to put it idealistically, a better world is possible, a more harmonious, peaceful, vital world is possible. But we have to shift culture. We have to begin to shift ourselves internally first,
mm-hmm.
or at least simultaneously with the other work we're doing. Some of the trouble I see with a lot of people who are heavily focused on activism is oftentimes they omit the internal component. And so we end up perpetuating similar systems that are already in place, and it's not very helpful. So I want to simultaneously help people work internally so that then we can work better with each other in community.
Are the workshops that you're teaching in a sense, acting as continuing groups in the areas where they've occurred? Or are you working with individuals kind of on a one-time basis, and then they go off and continue on their own path, or maybe in personal contact with you, but not as in a larger sense?
I teach in a lot of different ways. I teach one-time weekend workshops. I'll go in and teach a class on the Triple Soul or the Iron Pentacle or a class on will development, things like that. But I also have two-year classes that I teach all over the world. I teach in Europe and varying places in the U.S., in which people meet with me quarterly for a long weekend, and then they have homework that I give them, and we keep in contact via email. We have e-lists to discuss the work. Everyone has to do daily practice. So I teach in those ways, too. And then if people want to go on and work more deeply with me and we've established a connection, and they also feel strongly like they want a stronger connection to the tradition itself, I might work one-on-one with someone over time towards the process of initiation.
And by initiation, you mean initiation to the fairy trad?
Initiation into the fairy tradition. So that's going to be very few people. Not everyone wants to make that firm a commitment to the fairy tradition. But I really feel that anyone can learn something from the tools of the tradition and take it to expand their own practice.
How long have you been doing this now?
I've been teaching for probably 15 years, but I've been teaching full-time for, I'm not sure, I guess 4 or 5 years. And it's been ramping up more and more over the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
I did not set out to be a teacher of witchcraft. I did not set out to teach full time. It happened organically and naturally, which I actually appreciate. It's been sort of a grassroots thing of I'll go teach one place and someone will travel to that and then say, hey, would you come teach in my home community? So it's grown organically.
Do you see yourself continuing to do this in the long term, or is this something you see going on for a while and then moving on to another stage of teaching or practice?
I see myself continuing to teach. I think it's something I'm good at, and I think it's something I enjoy and it feeds me. However, I probably would like to travel less. I travel a little too much right now, so I am working on trying to build a local center.
Mm-hmm.
And have that be a home base for my teaching, which I don't have right now, and try to be a wider resource to other people in the pagan and magical communities. I'm also interested in starting to do some work in the prisons. I'm actually setting up to go teach Triple Soul in a couple of the women's prisons locally, things like that. So I'd like to expand my teaching in those ways as well. And other than that, I don't think too much about the future. I just do what's in front of me, and I assume that if things need to change, they'll change. Occasionally, I do get the feeling that I would like to retreat a little bit to get some more deep practice and learning in on my own, but I don't foresee that happening anytime soon.
You mean retreat in kind of pulling away and doing some private working, hermitage of sorts?
Yeah. Not even necessarily actually a hermitage, but just being a little bit less of a public figure. But I don't have a feeling that's going to be available to me, so I will just take my retreat time as I can get it.
And by locally, you're meaning the San Francisco Bay Area?
Yes.
Northern California?
Yeah.
So you've talked a little bit, in talking about the work you've been doing teaching, about social activism, and you've touched on that a bit, and the state of the world. And I know from having talked to you on occasion that social activism is a topic close to your heart. And how do you see your activism and spirituality working together? Obviously, you want to make the world a better place, and you said you want think people that need to start with themselves. Now, how far does that go, and what is the role of social activism in your work?
If I truly believe that every living thing is connected to every other living thing, I need to find a way to live in greater harmony with other living things. So that is naturally going to include working for things like social justice. However, the way in which a lot of activism has happened in recent years, doesn't really work for me anymore. I used to do a lot of marching and blockading and getting arrested and that sort of thing. And over the years, I've pulled back from doing that because I came to have a sense that I was putting too much of the same energy out there that I was trying to counter. It was energy more rooted in frustration and anger sometimes. I'm not saying that all street activists are this way, but this was my experience with a lot of people I was doing work with at the time. So I shifted to trying to just be a peaceful presence at actions and blockades. I would actually organize people to go and sit and do prayer and meditation, for example, and create an oasis of stillness to anchor the energy when other people were getting arrested. And that worked really well for me, and I still do that on occasion. The other thing that I do is I've worked off and on for the last 15 years at a local soup kitchen here that feeds the working poor and homeless populations in San Francisco. And that feels good to me. It feels like I can go in, I can scrub pots, I can be nice to people, I can, you know, serve up a few bowls of soup and help clean up. And I can't solve the problem of poverty and homelessness in that way, but at least I can help make sure a few more people get fed every day. So I really, at this point, believe that as far as activism goes, there are immediate term solutions like feeding people or like saying to a corporation, you know what, I really don't want you to build this toxic waste dump on the edge of this poor neighborhood in my city. I don't think that's a good thing, and we need to find an alternative. Those are really immediate term things we can do to help each other. Or, you know, I know people that volunteer at animal shelters, things like that. Or forest activists that are trying to immediately stop some of the old growth forest from getting chopped down. That's very immediate term stuff. And then I have this long-term project of human spiritual evolution, of becoming more connected, more responsible, more responsive people in general. Where I fall short is the medium-term stuff. What do we do about our current government administration? Mm-hmm. What do we do about the problem of war? War is a big problem. It's not going away anytime soon. Those sorts of intermediate issues in the realms of social justice and human interaction, I really have no answers for. People sometimes look to me for that, and I say, I can't help you. I can say, yes, we need immediate term action here, and we need to keep working for this long term. The long-term goal has become more and more my focus, and even attempting to deal with the intermediate stuff has fallen by the wayside in more recent years.
And your workshops and the teachings they do primarily focus on the longer-term goals.
Yes.
And they're not on the short-term, or obviously the intermediate term.
Right. The only way in which I bring the short-term social justice or peace or environmental work into my teaching at this point is I try to keep people aware of the context in which we're working, which all of this is in the soup, poverty, injustice, environmental devastation, war, all of that is part of the human condition. That's, we bring all of that to bear every time we show up to do anything. So I try to keep our consciousness open to that. And my advanced students, people who have taken my 2-year course and gone on to do more study with me, they all are required to have a service component to their work. I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's tutoring children or doing local beach cleanups where they live. They have to do a certain amount of service work every month. I feel that's really important because sometimes people involved in spiritual or religious activity can get too isolated.
You're talking about service to the community or service to particular kinds of causes?
They can do anything they want. They choose. I just say you have to do some sort of service work every month, whether it's volunteering at a soup kitchen or tutoring school children or environmental work or whatever. So they get to choose because obviously there are a plethora of things we need to address.
An ending plethora. There's a certain segment of the kind of the spiritual population, whether it be pagan or non-pagan, Buddhist or non-Buddhist, that's often very critical of kind of the mixing of seemingly of spirituality and politics. And you know, this definitely would qualify in a certain sense. Obviously, you're not in that camp. I don't know if you have a particular kind of response to that kind of criticism when it does come up.
There is no separation. That's my statement and my criticism. I don't understand how people can even separate spiritual practice from everyday life. It makes no sense to me. If we are having a spiritual practice in response to the condition we find ourselves in, how can we separate ourselves out and just say, oh, as an individual, I don't need to deal with my other brothers and sisters or with the earth I'm living on and the rest of the creatures here? That's hubris to me. To say that I can separate myself and one part of my life out from everything else, not only is hubristic, it also is another form of disconnection. I need to constantly recognize the ways in which I'm connected to all other things. And as soon as I say, oh, this one part of my life needs to be in a separate little box, I am fostering further disconnection and doing damage to my spiritual project. Years ago, I worked on the Pacific Stock Exchange, and this one man, I asked him, it was in the 80s, during apartheid in South Africa, and I asked him, how can you trade stock with this Dutch Afrikaner company? And he very proudly said, commerce should be free of politics. And not only is it not true, commerce and politics are best bedfellows. He spoke directly to what most of us find in our lives. We are this sort of person at home, that sort of person at work, this sort of person with our friends at play, that sort of person in our spiritual community. You know, how many people do we know put on what we might call their spiritual face to go do their spiritual work? And it's completely different than if they're hanging out drinking tea with their friends. Mm-hmm. This kind of compartmentalization, as I said, I think does damage to our humanity and to our spiritual practice. And it also has an even more pernicious effect in that I truly believe evil enters in through our disconnection. Evil is not some force out in the world. Evil happens when we forget we have these states of connection. Whether we're not connected inside or whether we're disconnecting ourselves from the world around us. Then we can become like Eichmann, who just said, oh, I want the trains to run on time. That was his job. He was a good German citizen who sent hundreds of thousands of people to their death because he was just disconnected. He wasn't a bad man. You know, he didn't set out to do evil. It just happened.
He probably loved his wife and kids.
Yeah, he loved his wife and kids, you know. So my project is to bring myself into a state of full integration. And that means including everything. I'm not after transcendence. If I wanted to transcend this world, I wouldn't be doing the kind of spiritual work I'm doing. I believe that I need to include it as much as possible and embrace it. And that includes all my parts, and that includes all the parts of the world, including the parts that are messy and ugly and I don't like very much. So no, I want to bring all of that to my practice every day. It's vitally important to me.
All right, well, thank you.
That concludes the second part of my interview with T. Thorne Coyle. Please tune in next week to hear part 3. Thank you. Goodbye. Thank you for listening to Ex Templo. We can be found on the web at extemplo.org, extemplo.org. Our theme music is the song Gamaya, courtesy of the band Samadhi. You can find more of their work at immaterialmusic.com.